English translation. We have here Daniel Leisegang, co-auditor of netzpolitik.org, and Diana Kastel, who self-describes as disruptive element in the administration and technical explainer. Welcome to this talk, and please welcome the two speakers on stage. From the electronic health register to digital health data space. Seven theses to current digital health politics. Please enjoy. Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Good morning visit in the area of health digitalization. I've just been introduced. I'm Bianca Kastel. I'm a developer and do this also on a professional basis. They know me as one of those with fax devices. I'm also one of the political personas I use to improve this on a professional level. And still heading over to Daniel. I have nothing much to add. I'm co-editor-in-chief at netzpolitik.org together with Anja Bizelli. We are also here on site. We have a meetup for those who still want to meet us. And looking forward to the talk. This is a talk on the area of politics, but it also contains traces of technical and security topics, because this topic is specifically political and technical, but it's still more a little bit more on the political spectrum for easy understandable. You don't need a lot of technical knowledge. We do the occasional deeper dive, but we mostly scratch more on the surface. The slides can also be found online on bicastle.de under this link. You will also find this article on netzpolitik.org. It's quite an article, quite a long one. We still try to explain it here in 45 minutes. And we'll get started right away. The last Communication Congress, 3633, not much had happened in the digital health system, so why do we have to talk about it again now? Well, there are three reasons. The first one is a pandemic. We noticed that there is a little bit of data disorientation, as I would like to call it, because we don't really have a lot of candidates for those. In the past, there were available somewhere, mostly analog, not really connected, and mostly not interoperable. And this political topic has not been really raised in ages and didn't get much attention. We also had a failure of a lot of technical solutions in this area with Karl Lauterbach, who drove this topic under Ulla Schmidt with the digital health card in 2003. But we have the impression that he is finishing now what he started roughly 20 years ago. And of course, we have the topic with new hype technologies, with artificial intelligence, which has a huge impact on health, and will be having a little bit more of a disruptive impact on there. So we have a lot of changes currently, and we're going to look at how this works for us. So we have five hypotheses for digital health politics, categorized by risk, less by chances, because we are not the people who want to take advantage of the opportunities, but more warn about the risks. But we still want to end on an optimistic note, and with this I'm going to hand over to Daniel for the political part. The first hypothesis is that the health digitization is far more than that. What we mean by that, if we look 3 to 5 years back, we have a benchmark by the Bertelsmann Foundation, which had a look at 17 OECD states, and Germany was on the unfortunate second to last position. This is what Bianca just mentioned, which the current administration is aiming for. Since August of 2022, there's a digital strategy. We're on the fourth position. We can see that the electronic health register is used by at least 80% of the publicly insured people. And we can see the numbers that the German administration is trying to address here. Several of these will not be reached, but at least 80% coverage of electronic health register should be established by 2025. This is aimed by an opt-out procedure, which we will get into in a minute. But what's happening at the moment? This month, several things happened. In Germany, two laws have been passed on the 14th of December this year. The debate has been relatively short. Bianca was in the subcommittee, had been invited. Within 2.5 hours, only the health subcommittee, not the digital subcommittee, had been in session, and quite quickly several people, like the security expert, or perhaps the expert, have not even been asked or consulted. First, the digital law, where the electronic health register is being covered, and the second one is the law for the usage of health data to use it for more research. Karl Lauterbach, the current German health minister, is not really only a big fan of these two laws, but also about the potential treasure trove of data that we can dive into. He wants to have a quantum leap, catch up in the international competition, loves artificial intelligence, and what we will get into in a minute is that generative large language models have a science of clear own intelligence, and he really wants to apply artificial intelligence and generate structured data out of this for us. One day before, we had the European Health Data Room or scope. So we can imagine that as an one big area for data. So we're aiming for interoperability on the European level for primary usage of this data. We're starting with the most complicated and are creating a single digital market for health data for secondary usage. So it seems a little bit complex, but on the left and right you can see the two pillars for both approaches. On the left, the primary usage of data for patients, which mostly applies to the private people, citizens, and on the right side, mostly the area of science, which is supposed to profit from this. And we want to learn from the pandemic for this. So coming to hypothesis number two, we already approached that with artificial intelligence. A lot of companies are interested in this, and Colin Lauterbach has a big fable for AI itself. And here we have a study from 2022 where McKinsey looked at the usage potential and the savings potential with the electronic health register the health prescription has. The first pillar on this graph is the potential that we look at if we directly have savings, about 7 million. And several secondary potential for savings through enabled technologies. You don't have to look at the circle in detail, but I just want to point out what we have in the background behind this and the lever that we want to use. You can see the health prescription and health data register. And if you move along one quarter into the circle, then we add additional electronic methods which point to certain enablements, and there are up to 30 million billion euros that can be saved through this. And of course, companies are also interested in using this data, those which are already dominant in the market. First of all, Google, which has already been operating a little bit longer in the market with generative language models, which also cover health areas, specialized in that, and want to target that market. What they try to solve with this is a big administrative burden, which medics and dentists should be covered. And Lauterbach really wants to structure the data and gain the structured data, which is a huge manual effort at the moment, which can be ideally covered by AI. But this language model can answer simple questions, like first indicators of a bronchitis. But they never really get the context or can really get a feel for the patients inside the room. But research shows that patients actually trust those AI models a lot compared to doctors, but at the same time they just don't work. There's an article in the Washington Post which shows that there are a lot of hallucinations, same as ChatGPT, but in the health area this is definitely not what we are looking for. Microsoft is also looking into this. They bought another business for $20 billion, which has been working on Dragon software, language software in the past. Some of you might know that. And this is being applied in the turbo mode for the waiting room or the treatment room. On the left side you have a patient who's coming in, talking to the doctor. The doctor is greeting the patient. And this co-pilot is extracting that data on the fly and is directly filling in the blanks in the health register. Is listening in online in the cloud. Obviously nothing bad will happen with this approach, and that is what Microsoft is working on. And the third company, actually this is an important point first. Microsoft is hoping for benefits that about 70% less risk or impression of a burnout or a tiredness is there for the people treating patients and have less mental load. That this is not working up until now is an example. Based on Epic, a company from the US, which is also joining the German market and European market at the moment at the Charité and in Tübingen University, where they already set down foot, and it's health center software, which, same as the other two examples, is aiming for the to get the doctors and male and the nurses work off their chest. They did start it in the UK in roughly 10 years ago, in Denmark, and recently also in Norway. And in the UK, the mood has relatively been bad. A lot of threats of quitting. And those people actually mentioned that it's not taking off the mental load, but stressing them even more, it's malfunctioning. And the example in Norway made more waves, where there were a lot of demonstrations, where the health system, which was based on the system of Epic, they wanted to get rid of it. In the central Norwegian region, they had a lot of people quitting, demonstrations, and we've been told this system has to go. Also, Epic doesn't work, and with this, we're going to thesis number three.
Now it's getting technical. It's nice that the motto of the 3733 is unlocked, because now it's about cryptography. Artificial intelligence is try to solve problems with brute force. Karl Lauterbach admitted that it should be that the health data will be collected on the cloud, also pseudonymously, to find things out inside the data. It should be in a so-called trustworthy executive area, but we have a small problem. There is an electronic patient act, but it's people don't really like it. Not many people use it. And also, we can't directly access an end-to-end encrypted health data. So the problem is that it is opt-in and that everything is encrypted. Right now it uses two external key generation services, so you can't generate your own key, but it's a bit more secure because you do know your own key. But now it should be changed to opt out, and the EPA should be is getting changed. He's tries not to be too unfair to the Gematik. Many following parts are political. The Gematik has part of the blame, but also part should go to the politics. Right now, it can be commented until the mid of January. What is it about? Right now, we have an electronic patient records, which is migrated to version 3.0. Until now, you have some documents in your patient records, which are all encrypted. As a government, you want to use this data. You want to use them automatically for research. So you take the data, which until now were end-to-end encrypted, and migrate them to the new system and break the encryption. But it still should be secured somehow. So there's a new system. You take the decrypted data and re-encrypt them. It happens in a trusted environment. This is always with the health insurance companies, but they themselves should not have access to the data. So in the healthcare records 3.0, there's a very powerful master key, which can get lost. Even Microsoft lost it at some point. This new data will be re-encrypted with a very weak key. For example, KVNR, the healthcare insurance number, which is known by the health insurance. So you transfer the data to a new area with an encryption, but which is known to the health insurances, although they shouldn't have access to the data. So you don't have any possibility to encrypt your data yourself. Now it's get more complicated with a bit technical at the morning. Later we will find out that this topic is opt-out. So all these functions which adapt to the system. For example, transfer the data to research centers to fill the data into these records are basically standard. So you can say, I don't want it, I refuse, but it's constructed that in the trusted executive area, the data is encrypted very weakly, and the you save it as consent, although consent just means people haven't refused. You save all the consensus where people haven't actively refused to do, for example, send your data to the research centers, then you have to actively refuse that this is happening, or if some doctors should have access to the data. So this is also, this opt-out principle is implemented inside the technical specification. So this trusted environment should be secure, but IT security can be complicated, as we will see. There are many other actors which have access to the system. For example, the identity providers who have to have some access to the system, the health insurances, the IGAs, they should have at least write access to the system, maybe later also read access. So there's a whole another environment of actors who have access to this data, although it should be in a trusted, secure environment, which will get interesting. So from a technical point of view, the healthcare vectors are not centered on the patient. So politicians sometimes say it will empower the patients and give them control over the data, but from a technical point of view, that it is not really happening. Your only possibility to actually have technical control is to give your opt-out, to directly give your opt-out to everything. So do these trustworthy executive environments actually exist already? Yes, they exist. For example, Edgeless Systems, which is to encrypt Kubernetically. So you can have private environments inside of public clouds. So they promise that you could process the data, for example, at ABS or Google, while still keeping the privacy. But this is dependent that the technology will actually secure this. The core of this V is a secure enclave, which should protect the data inside these processes, which works okay, but every 2 years or so it breaks in some way or another with side channel attacks or something like this. So, if we assume that it isn't worked with the same system as other public systems, we can ignore it, but what we cannot ignore is what has already happened. For we already broke systems for electronic healthcare cards. We also had chaos at KIM, where certificates could use double for different health insurances.
So in practice, there is even less security. This is the world that we technologically are going towards. And that's a problem, because you want to enable people to be encrypted, or give them the chance to be encrypted. But in reality, most of the already stable security is basically broken. Thesis form, yeah. So all of this is also there to be able to use artificial intelligence. And also, now you can say, ChatGPT and all the others, there are very impressive results. And there are middle-grade services. Or when you look at these picture generators and you get a picture out and you don't like it, you can just make another. That's not the same with the health sector. Okay, so now we're talking about the law on the health data and the security services. Health services and health insurances need calculation data for their bills. And these health data obviously have sensitive data in there that partially have impact on these bills. And the courses of the diseases or the recuperation are always different, and these things have to be in the documents. And these have to be data protected as well. And at the moment, it's opt out, so the insurances can just do it. But in reality, in the next 2 years, the health insurances, after this law comes to pass, they can just do a lot of things, and they can probably experiment a lot as well. And in this picture of the digital health system, the insurances have to position themselves as service companies, but because they're going into an area where they don't have expertise, we have to be careful with this. So this leads us to the billing data in a stochastic technology. Is there a precise diagnostic possible? I would say no. And there were a couple of cases that were really quite difficult. Many people who have looked at it saw it critically, but it's still a law now. So additionally, we have the so-called AI general AI problems. Well, we have things like AI finds good correlations, but the causality is no good. And this is something from the German Health Council. They're talking about tuberculosis in X-rays, and they've found out that it doesn't really work. There is a really weird bias going on. So I think the contrast or something was very much higher in the mobile versions than the tower versions or desktop versions. And the countries where the tuberculosis rates were higher. Okay, so the tuberculosis count was higher depending on the device that you used. And these problems only come up later because you want to use this data. So it's a problem because the causality comes up later, and you know, so it was a mistake. So in the area of X-rays, there are shortcuts taken, which is unfortunate. There are many other examples. Here, for example, you can see that it's not that easy. IBM Watson tried to place something in this area as well. They failed gloriously. And now, it's unlikely that even with more technology and more data that this is going to go better now. We'll see what happens. We'll see what comes out of it at the end of the day. Thesis 5, I know what you recovered from last summer. There's the topic of the research. It's very, very strong.
So science needs high resolution connected data sets, and privacy will be the more unlikely the higher we have the resolution and connection of data sets. So it becomes more and more difficult to ensure the privacy of our patients. We have to add that for research, these data are centrally being supplied in data centers. So to that, we still add pseudonymous billing data and also other research data. So if we look at the law, the re-identification risk is trying to be minimized through pseudonymization as good as possible in the application. But in the same text, we mentioned that if there are cases of accidental re-identification, it's not that bad. And we only want to apply that for when we deal with the patients, but they don't have to actively consent. So big point is pseudonymity doesn't ensure privacy or security. There are methods to generate anonymous data. But with this, we mostly have unusable data, or people can re-identify it with this. So it's a trade-off. So this is going to stay interesting. Also with the afterthought that Karl Lauterbach is going for more centralized data lakes. Another interesting fact, if we're looking at a data research center, Constanze Kurz has a process going on, which has been running for a longer time, but has been paused in February. But all the data is available pseudonymized at the moment for health insurance provider, but they don't have a security concept for that data. It would have been available or possible to have such a concept since the law was introduced. A lot of time has passed by then, so Constanze Kurz sued them together with the GFF, the German ACLU, because there is no concept that can be sued. Let's see how this is going to turn out. Also, the retention time for this data is roughly 100 years. I'm not sure how often you looked at technology changes in the past, but even we look at different systems and processes, 100 years are a long time to deal with this. addressing hypothesis 6, opt-out is not an option. So we've been looking a lot at trust and saw that access to the systems is easily available for a lot of people. So non-surprising, and coming back to the political part of this, is that in the year 2019, we still had the concept of informed consent. We know this from GDPR, from cookie banners, from organ donations, where there was a highly ambitious debate, but we see a paradigm shift where we can see the shift from not having to consent in an informed way, and another party is waiting for me to actually consent. But the first step is to just be introduced to the system, with me not having any control over that, and I can object to that within a certain time frame. And this is a shift that Bianca addressed, which is going to be highly relevant for the electronic patient register. There's a four stages opt-out concept. Do I want to have an electronic health register? How is it going to be filled? Who has access to that? And is this data going to be supplied for research as well? Actually, two levels are only relevant for us. Do I want to have such a system with centralized customer data? And do I want to provide this data or provide access to research where things can be re-anonymized, re-identified? So trust that I'm supposed to give up front is colliding is opposed to opt-out, also compared to AI, which is only giving me weak methods to object. This applies to the European health data space. The law draft that is being debated at the moment on the European level, which is debated at the moment, so the draft of the European Commission didn't look at into opt-out opportunities at all, so I had to accept that. So that was in conflict with the German plans for the opt-out, and was a big question for a long time. How can these two things be combined, or are they actually compatible? The European Parliament gave this into the first subcommittee and came up with a solution. We don't need an opt-out, but on the last meters, it was introduced, but only in a soft manner. It had been demanded, it's in there now, but the member states have the prerogative to decide if opt-out is possible. With this, I only resolve the conflict between the member states and the European Union, but there's no opt-in even foreseen in this law. And if it's going to survive the upcoming trilogue between the different European levels is questionable. So in 2024, we come with a paradigm shift to the principle of opt-out. It's a blueprint on the EU level, and also here in Germany, it will have a lot of impact. It is going to become the new default how I treat data. So this is the actual political scandal that is going way beyond this health area that we're actually discussing. Why is this relevant? Two things. We just had the 40th birthday of the law of European self-governance, that we can say, how do we want to treat our own data? How do we want to be treated?
was mit meinen Daten passiert. Das heißt gleichzeitig, ich muss mich damit beschäftigen, ich muss das reflektieren und ich werde damit als
I'm an empowered subject to determine how my data is being used as an autonomous citizen and I'm empowered to deal with that. And we're turning to a more paternalistic system where we say, oh, all this system is for social public good and for research, and that is why we tend more to go for opt-out on a legal level. But that shows how the perception of the citizens by our society or by politics is not really based in reality. But we also now have an asymmetry of power. If I would be really empowered, the health service providers or health insurance providers would flood me with information, but they don't. But what they do is a big part of German society doesn't even know what is coming and what will apply to them, and it will come anyway, and opt-out will only be used by those who actively pay attention, but it's still unsure which method will be available for the actual opt-out. And if we look at the health insurance providers, they have little interest in changing this principle and giving people the options. Hypothesis number 7, how can a patient-centered health digitization look like? We already criticized a lot of points, so you can foresee what might actually be a better step. Now heading over to you now, because you already worked in this area. So if we look back 2 or 3 years, roughly 3.5 years, we had big digitization projects in the healthcare system. In the pandemic, we needed a big solution for contact tracing, and we were successful with that. We implemented the corona warning app. Yes, there were high tensions were rising high and high debate. Google and Apple were also involved, but the German administration created successfully a big example how something like this can look like with self-determination. But we are looking to pursue the most constructive way forward in this, but in the healthcare system, we have a lot of chances, but also necessities to look at adequate and time-adequate solutions for the healthcare systems and digital solutions that we have.
We tried to express with different organizations how good system would look like for the Corona One app. Because we always are a bit in the nerd bubble, we thought, let us speak with patients. So we made this open letter with CCC and the German AIDS help, and many other organizations which supported this letter, for example the German Consumer Protection Agency, which or the Paritätische Gesamtverband. So many organizations which represent stigmatized persons, it's they say they want to have this digitalization, but they want to have it. The patient should decide how much they actually take part in it. In the last months, when you look at the discussions around this topic, both in German national and the European levels, for example, about dangers of discriminations, these worries are discredited, and It is said that researchers who warn that the systems aren't secure, these researchers should be paid by American browser corporations. So it's not about the topic anymore, but just discrediting. So it's important that this open letter is not just our nerd battle, but across very different areas of affected people. We have four demands about the the first demand is the right to decide over your own information, which is aren't even empty words. It is a fundamental right. If you look at the electronic patient's records, you do have the possibility to block out some information, but in some areas this isn't possible. For example, for if you get certain medicaments, you can't block them out, so everyone who has access can see these medicaments, which tells them what illnesses you might have. So you must have complete control over all areas, what data goes in there and who has access to it. So you can actually make informed decisions. The second demand is to define the common good and then implement it. It sounds nice, but it isn't really defined, and that's for a good reason. Because it's easy to say you weaken data protection to ensure this common good, which helps corporations who want to use this data to make profits. So you don't define the common good because that would restrict the actual usage of the data. The patients would have to profit by this usage. They should have access to the results. The results should be free of any patents. And only when you have defined this common goods, you can talk about how to make sure this is free of discrimination and patient-centric. The next demand is trust through technology. The trust in these systems rests on a few actors which aren't really that trustworthy. The Gematik at least has a lot of open source in nowadays, which is quite good, but still a lot in the system are just magic things which aren't where no one really knows what it does. Just some core specifications, but it's only trustworthy when you can actually look at it and see what it does, and also neutral third parties could look at it and see what is actually happening. Even the BSE and BFDE, they might be asked by the corporations, but don't have any control anymore. Trust can in the systems can only be had if they are open source and people can look at them. And it's only really secure if you don't rely on security through obscurity, but everything is open source and can be controlled by neutral third parties. Next demand is about the cloud technology. In the health insurances, 11 million data records should go into the so-called trustworthy areas. Karl Lauterbach says it has some flair of privacy and security, but it's a very strong centralization of the data. We know these systems will fail and leak at some point in the future. So we would feel much better if it's as decentralized as possible. So you don't just have a big pot of data, but the data for a single patient are collected together somewhere. So that's the end of the talk. You can see the article or the slides, and now come the questions.
Thank you very much for this beautiful lecture. Please, if you have questions, go to the microphones. We'll take your questions one by one. Please, a question from the Signal Angel first. There are five questions from the internet. One of them would be, are there approaches to make these data accessible via APIs without putting them into a big pot? And is it possible to get a federate architecture for all these approaches somehow? Yes. So there is a technological approach, or there are approaches like there. They're being used. And it's very interesting. In Germany, there are places where these technologies are being used successfully. But the clients of the data research center and the insurance company often don't use it. So there are possibilities to do this. There is not a problem with this, in my opinion. Okay, thank you for now. My question was, you mentioned Lauterbach more than once. Is there one political party or a group of interest who can still, you know, oppose these opt-out ideas? Or is this us against all the others, basically? No, there is some people who wrote an open letter. So Sabrina Gutzmacher, for example, who's here, by the way, there are some people in the Green Party who are strictly against it and specifically against it. And I have a feeling that this topic is purposefully put into the health realm. And the digital people, so to speak, are not asked on purpose. So the health people basically decided about the data security risks. And that, I think, we have to look at with all the means that we have. We have to go against this, you know, go before court and do something seriously. Thank you for the question and the answer. Mic three, please. Okay, so first of all, thank you very much. At the end, you said data centralized, where would you like to see them saved? With the doctors and the practices? Well, I am a person who would love a decentralized copy at the patient's place or devices, basically. But what you have in the digital patient file, you have one version, and with this you have the necessity to have the copy with the patients. And there is always some need for backups, but in general, I don't think we have to change the system completely, but that's not the issue. The issue is that the insurance company make backups that they weren't supposed to make. So we have the decentralized possibilities, it's just not wanted. Okay, Signal Angel from the internet, please. The next question will be, are there concrete action plans about how does this opt-out actually work? Is there time windows that we can use to do something? Okay, so about the topic of opt-out, there is something, there is an information campaign with 4 million euro in their budget. It's not sure what they're going to do, probably going to be doing that very information job. But now in the new year, we have to look at what happens. We have to look at the centralized information for customers. And we have to look at the law, which now has been passed, and the putting in it practice. And we have to wait and see how it is actually going to go. But I mean, it'll surely help if they get a lot of questions. Like, I want to, you know, use my rights. How does this work? I have a comment on encryption. In my opinion, many encryption technologies are not really usable for actual everyday use. Many people have
okay, there are a lot of encryption methods which can be broken in the banking system. That's not a problem, but in health systems it is. But even if I just collect these data and break them several years later, it's going to be a problem. Did you think about that? So, looking at this, the Gematik actually looked into one aspect of this, specifically quantum security to trustworthy runtime environments and the processing of this. So if we look at research centers and how is this addressed, then in a research center, there are no bigger concerns that have been taken into consideration at the moment. Thank you for this talk and for your work on this topic. Do you have information whether opt-out people are going to be disadvantaged by the health insurance providers? Well, according to the law, it's not supposed to happen, but in reality, we have an idea how this might turn out. And a question from the internet. Concerning the hypothesis with statistics and the health insurance providers, does this mean that we're going to get risk-based insurance policies, same as car insurance policies that we have in the past? No, this is prohibited by the law, but we can fully exclude the possibility that people who are in contact with this. So if health insurance providers provide recommendations for people, they will have a certain profiling of their customers, of the patients. But if we strictly logical looking at this for more market-based health insurance providers, that might actually be the next step. Question. Medicinal data are not completely error-free all the time. If one doctor says do surgery on the hip, the next one says on second opinion you don't have to do this. If several of these diagnoses are only billing triggered and not just there for the patient, does the patient, if he opted in to the electronic health register, does he have the option to remove that data later? Like what this doctor recommended is complete nonsense. He's not supposed to have anything to do with my health data. I don't want this documentation to stay in that on the record. Fundamentally, the right to delete is still included in the law, but the problem is that you're gonna have subsequent problems. Because the diagnosis, which is known to the health insurance, is known to them, which is a problem that's already that we're already having now. You have to solve that with them, and that is not really explicitly mentioned in the debate, and there has been the opinion that doctors said in the hearings that patients should not have any say in this, so drifted into a weird direction in the discussion. So if you look at the health register for everybody, did you find any hints also in the opt-out area that other methods of data processing are available, or are they, is the data encrypted at the same point, same as every other data? Well, the technical solution states that this processing of data is blocked by the consent, but there's still some entitlement management that states that certain applications still have access to the data that is not being changed. But as a patient, you can put in certain constraints to this data, which are then being respected. So data-wise, it's not really a difference at which point it is decrypted. So looking at EPA 3.0, it will be based on the on the chip cards and stuff as well. So if you look at the patient security number, that is stored on the chip. On the chip card that you're getting, all of those are unique per patient for your entire life time. And all this data, and the second part is only available to the health insurance provider, so they generally have that data available as well. It's not only stored on the chip card. So you can see, based on the questions that we heard today, that this is really interesting topic. So thank you, Daniel, and